Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
I'm Pat Iyer, and before we start today's program, I want to share with you something I am just bursting to tell you about. Along with my colleague Barbara Levin, I am planning the first virtual LNC conference to take place in July 2020. We've put together a panel of doctors, nurses, nurse attorneys, legal nurse consultants, and business people to bring you business and clinical education specific to your role as a legal nurse consultant. This is all done in the comfort of your home. No airfare, no hotel, no Uber or Lyft or taxi, no masks, no germs, no additional expenses. Join us July 9th and 10th, 16th and 17th, 2020, when we put on a virtual conference. You can get all the details at this link, lnc.tips/July2020virtual. That link is lnc.tips/July2020virtual. See you there. Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about money, finance, creating wealth on any income. And I brought on the show Renny Gabriel, who is a person who I met at a networking group called Collaboration Circle. He is a finance guy, as you can tell from the banner that is over his head if you're watching this podcast on YouTube. And if you're listening, I'll introduce him as a CLU, a CFP, and a BFD. And he donates 100% of his business profits to a charity that saves two lives at a time. His award-winning book is Wealth on Any Income, and it's been translated into 8 languages. So, Renny, thank you for being part of this show, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Pat. It's my privilege.
Now, let me guess. A CFP is probably a certified financial planner.
That's correct.
A CLU is a certified licensed undertaker.
Nope, it's it's close. Not. It's a chartered life underwriter. So you got insurance and undertaker. I mean, those are pretty close together.
Pretty close. You know, those insurance premiums, they don't pay off until the undertaker comes in.
You got it.
And I won't guess about BFD.
Many of your listeners might be able to figure out what BFD stands for. And the middle F kindly might be considered frickin', big frickin' deal. And the reason I do that, not for just the humor, but the reality is the credentials don't really establish how well someone can support someone else. And so I really look at the results the people I've worked with produce to determine if I'm doing a good job, not what credentials I've got.
So when we were talking before I turned on the recording, I was pretty close in guessing what that stood for. I was being facetious. I thought it was really a credential that came from some school other than the School of Hard Knocks, which has given many of us educations.
That's true. But your guess was right on target.
Tell me about the charity that saves two lives at a time. That's an intriguing statement.
Thank you. I'm glad you asked about that first, because that's really the most important thing to me. Shelter to Soldier rescues dogs from high-kill environments. They've taken them off the street. They pick them up in pounds, rescue organizations. And if they have the right personality and they're the right size, they will train them as service animals for our soldiers who've come back with PTSD or traumatic brain injuries. And our soldiers allow us to have the kind of life in the United States that we have and the freedoms that we have. And they're in other parts of the world and they come back. They're not treated like the heroes they are. Being in those kind of situations is definitely difficult. And they're committing suicide at the rate of almost 1 an hour after they've returned home. Mm-hmm. And this charity, when they're matching up the service dog with the veteran, not one soldier has committed suicide after they've gotten their service animal. So that's why I say this charity saves two lives at a time. So it's just my honor and my pleasure and to donate as much money as I can to them because it saves lives. So that's it. 100% of my book, my programs, my coaching, the 100% of the profits I donate to that charity.
Thank you for clarifying that. And that certainly highlights a problem that we don't talk about enough in our country, in my opinion, and that is dealing with the devastation that's left by the people who've sacrificed their health and in some cases their lives in order to help us.
That's right. So, you know, I got it easy during the Vietnam War. I was on a naval ship, showering, sitting at a table to eat food, while other, like people I know, were crawling through rice paddies in Vietnam and coming home with colostomy bags or in a body bag. So I had it lucky.
That was certainly an unusual part of our history. I was in high school at that time. I know some of our listeners were not alive during the Vietnam War and don't remember this firsthand, but it certainly was a sobering time watching the boys that we went to high school with and college with being called up. I remember my brothers, who are twins, were part of the lottery system, and when they got a number, I think it was like in the high 200s or low 300s, everybody in the family breathed a sigh of relief because they calculated that those boys were not going to be called up to the service before the war would be over.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, that was a tough time. Let's focus on the topic today, and I appreciate what you've shared about work with the service dogs. We are recording this in the middle of a pandemic, and this show will be released in the middle of the pandemic. And the media question is that for some people who are listening, their incomes have been limited. They might be legal nurse consultants working with attorneys who are working in law firms that are shuttered. The courthouses are closed. The insurance companies may not be writing the checks to settle cases with the same frequency that they did beforehand. There are efforts to increase the amount of money that households are receiving in this country to try to compensate for the losses and the high levels of unemployment. So with that in mind, and certainly this question applies in tough times whenever those are occurring. They may be externally driven, like right now, or they could be times in the legal nurse consultant's life where cash flow is limited for whatever reason. But tell us about what measures we can take when we're facing that situation of limited cash flow, limited income.
One of the things to do is to start creating labels on various expenses. And there are primarily three labels. People have their fixed expenses, they have their variable expenses, and they have their discretionary expenses. As an example, a fixed expense would be a mortgage or rent. And just because it's a fixed expense doesn't mean there isn't flexibility or there is no negotiation available, because there still is. As an example, I have several apartment buildings, and if a tenant comes to me and they're having difficulty paying the rent, we'll work something out. Many municipalities are saying that because of COVID-19, because of the coronavirus, if someone is out of work, even if they can't prove that's the case or prove that they had it or any of those situations, they're still entitled to have a deferral of the rent. That doesn't mean it doesn't get paid. What it does mean is other arrangements are made. So let's say someone can't pay rent for the month. Again, a fixed expense. Well, then maybe that is just added on to the end of their lease. Maybe it's deducted from their security deposit. Maybe what they do is they pay an additional $100 a month over 6 to 12 months to repay that month that they ended up having to skip. So even fixed expenses have some flexibility. Same thing with a car payment. Friend of mine has a car. I helped him buy it. So when he wanted to defer the payments for 90 days, he sent a document to me to sign that he got from the manufacturer saying, you can defer your payments for 90 days. So again, it doesn't matter if it's a fixed, discretionary, or variable, there is flexibility. Okay, so those are fixed expenses. Those are the things that month to month, month in, month out, are the same amount. Mortgage payment, rent payment, car payment, and things like that. Well, the variable expenses show up every month as well, but they vary from month to month. The electricity bill could be higher or lower. Gas bill, gasoline bill, your food bill. These are things that are variable. You have to eat every month, but how much you spend can change. So that's label number two. And label number three is the discretionary expenses. This is where you have complete control. This is where you say, you know what? We're paying $100 a month for cable TV. We can go without that. We'll just watch regular channels. Or, I mean, in the past, I would talk about going out to the movies. Well, the theaters are closed. You can't go to live theater or movies because it doesn't enable social distancing, so they're just closed. Other discretionary expenses could be a gymnasium. It could be anything that you cut out and it's not going to come back and bite you. Because, as an example, I no longer go to the gym. I exercise at home, you know, and I do it religiously every morning. So there's flexibility in all these things, but those are the three labels you have available: fixed, variable, and discretionary. And you look over a list of all the things where the money goes and you say, what is this? Is it fixed? And then you look for how do you make adjustments? That leads me to an attitude wealthy people have. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea of when ordinary people hear familiar information, they'll often say, I've heard that, or I know that, or I've done that, or something similar. What a wealthy mindset or a wealthy person does is when they hear familiar information, like I'm talking about fixed and variable expenses, they ask questions like, where does that apply to me? Or how can I reduce that? Or what can I substitute for that? Or who can support me with that? Those questions lead to the solutions. But if you just look at a list of your expenses and say, I don't know what to do with this, that statement takes you nowhere.
And I think there's a story, and I think it was Vanderbilt, one of the robber barons from that era, had a telephone booth in his home, and he expected his guests to put in dimes so that they could make phone calls from his house. And he defended his actions by saying, well, you know, I got wealthy because I'm not a spendthrift, and I do require people to hold their own. So it's an interesting mindset among the extraordinarily wealthy people who focus on details that many of us would say, well, he's a multi-gazillionaire. What does he care that people are using his telephone line? So you can carry it to an extreme, as he did, Or you can be generous and donate, as Bill Gates does, for example, Bill and Melinda Gates, who are intent on giving away as much money as they can for worthy causes. Tell us a little bit more about the mindset of the wealthy people now that we're delving into how they may ask those questions that you've just identified. What are some other things that wealthy people do other than charging their guests 10 cents for a phone call?
I'll give you another example because you're bringing it up. And that was my opportunity to see a program about John D. Rockefeller, who was one of the wealthiest men in the world in the mid-1800s from Standard Oil. I'm going to cough, but then I want to tell you about a journal. I had an opportunity to see a journal that he kept when he was 11 years of age, where he documented every penny that came into his life and where he spent every penny. And these are the kinds of habits that if they work for people who become the richest men in the world or the richest people in the world, it'll work for ordinary folks as well. So, you know, it's not about being cheap. It's about being conscious. And one of the difficulties we have when it comes to being unconscious is how society does not value financial literacy. And what I'm getting at is we're bombarded from several areas, and the wealthy are aware of this. If you look at Hollywood movies, if you look at TV programs, if you look at the scripture, if you look at fairy tales, you will see how we have been told only poor people are kind and noble, and the wealthy people are greedy and heartless. But as you said, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is donating hundreds of millions of dollars to what they view as worthy causes to deal with problems around the world, whether it's healthcare or education. And I like the quote from Andrew Carnegie, who again was one of the wealthiest people at one time, along with Rockefeller and others. He had said, well, the purpose of creating wealth is to give it away. And when he was donating his money to build libraries around the world, he gave away what in today's dollars would be the equivalent of $300 million. Hmm. $300 million? No, $300 billion with a B. Yeah, because it was millions of dollars in the 20s.
Yes.
It would be billions of dollars today. And so I'll give you an example of the indoctrination. You've got the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. Jack is poor, plants these beans, goes up in the clouds, and guess what? The giant has a goose that lays golden eggs. He's got a singing harp, things of that nature. Well, Jack steals some of the golden eggs. He steals the goose that lays the golden eggs. The giant starts to chase him down the beanstalk. Jack cuts down the beanstalk. The giant falls to his death. Guess what? It's okay. It's okay for poor Jack to kill the rich giant because the giant was rich and Jack was poor. What kind of moral is that for a fairy tale, that it's okay to kill rich people if you're poor? And that's what people don't recognize, is these alternative morals. As an example, in the scripture, when they talk about a camel can pass through the eye of a needle easier than a rich man can get into heaven. Oh, rich people can't get into heaven. Only poor people can. You've got the Game of Thrones with the Starks versus the Lannisters. You've got the movie Titanic with poor Jack in the bowels of the ship, who's, you know, Mary's attracted to because he's happy, he's fun, and he's poor, while her fiance is rich and he's disgusting. Hollywood, movie, like I said, books by Charles Dickens. So many places you look, we are indoctrinated with the idea that it is not good to be wealthy. But like you said, those are the biggest philanthropists. So there's an attitude of the wealthy. I would say primarily there's three secrets. And one of them is this attitude. And there's a lot of different attitudes. It's about asking questions. It's about wealth creation is a team sport, not a solo sport. It's looking at the big picture first and the details second. I've got a list of 30 attitudes of the wealthy that I wrote in a book recently. So one of those secrets is the attitude. It is different than ordinary people. And the second secret really is the forms. The wealthy use forms we've probably all seen, whether you're filling out an income and expense form or you're filling out a balance sheet because you want to borrow money from the bank. We fill these things out. But the wealthy people look at what's on those forms differently than ordinary people. As an example, they don't view their house as an asset. Why? Because their house doesn't generate income, I guess, unless you're using it for I would say a B&B. Help me with the word. I forgot already.
An Airbnb?
Thank you. Airbnb. Okay. You know, when you get to my age, you just lose some of these things.
Oh, don't I know it.
So the home is not an asset. Why? Because it doesn't generate an income. It does generate expenses. There's mortgage payments. Even if the house is free and clear, you've got property taxes, you've got utilities, you've got maintenance costs. A house sucks up money. It doesn't produce an income. So it's not really an asset. When a wealthy person is talking about assets, they're talking about those things that will generate an income, whether they're working or not working. And the third secret is the investments. Wealthy people are not limited to stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. They may do peer-to-peer lending or first or second trust deeds or invest in multi-unit apartment buildings, real estate, office buildings. They may have their own business. I know a lot of your listeners are what I would call self-employed, or they be entrepreneurs, where maybe they're sending out other nurses to work with attorneys. Mm-hmm. That creates a saleable business where the self-employed doesn't have anything to sell other than themselves. So, you know, when I'm talking about a business, I'm talking about something, if I stepped out of it, would still generate an income. Mm-hmm. So these are the kinds of things that the wealthy people invest in. These are what I call the three secrets. It's the attitude, it's how they look at the forms, and it's where are they able to invest that ordinary people don't think of. They just think of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds.
And I noticed the name of your company is Wealth on Any Income. And I'm curious about that because that implies that any of us and all of us should be focused on managing our money or knowing our numbers. That's my interpretation, but I'm curious about your interpretation.
I would say you are correct. And the reason it's called Wealth on Any Income is when I was age 50, I was broke. At one time prior to that, I had so little money, I had to collect soda bottles and cans to get the refund money so I could buy food for my family. So I know what it's like to have no money. And at age 50, after two divorces and a business failure, I'm doing business coaching. Primarily, my clients were certain public accountants or financial planners, stockbrokers, people in the finance industry, and I was coaching them on how to grow their businesses. I was only earning $5,000 a month. It's not that much money. But what I was using was a 5,000-year-old secret that hopefully your listeners have heard of, called pay yourself first. Hmm. So I was setting aside 10% of what I was making, which is $500 a month. And after 3 years, I saved up a whopping $18,000. Well, like I said earlier, wealth creation is a team sport, not a solo sport. And my last, final, best wife had a real estate partner who found a three-unit building that he wanted us to buy. Mm-hmm. And with $18,000, that was not enough of a down payment. So my wife chipped in $18,000. He chipped in $36,000. And so the three of us bought it. And I had taken a class at UCLA on how to manage rental real estate. So I managed it. It had deferred maintenance, so we took care of that stuff. We re-rented it. Getting more rent increased the value, and the market was rising at the time. And we got a $500,000 profit from the small three-unit building. And I could see things were turning out well, so I borrowed more money, and we made down payments on more apartment buildings. In 6 years, we went from this three-unit building to 50 units that we owned and controlled. So again, it was a team effort. He found properties, the three of us pooled our money, and we bought them. And I managed them. He came up with ideas on how to refurbish them. Again, it was a team effort. And that's so important. You will see wealthy people don't create large businesses by themselves. Now, I'm sure that all of your listeners have heard of Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett. Very few of them are probably aware of who Charlie Munger is. He happens to be half of Berkshire Hathaway. Warren Buffett's a visionary. Charlie happens to be the execution master. In Apple Computer, it was Steve Jobs as the visionary and Steve Wozniak as the execution master. I mean, Elon Musk and you know, does not know how to manufacture cars. He doesn't know how to build spacecraft, but he has execution masters in those divisions. And every large successful business has more than one person involved in it at the beginning. And so when we talk about creating wealth as a team sport, no one does it by themselves. No one who truly becomes successful has done it by themselves. So for all of your listeners, it's really something to be considered. And I noticed for myself, I had a book publishing company on my own, didn't do all that well. Had an art gallery business of my own, didn't do all that well. I had a pension administration company with partners. We sold it off to a public company. Mm-hmm. When I look at my own past, I see where I was the most successful. I had partners. Where I was the least successful, I had the business on my own.
That's a great point. And it makes me think of when I was running my legal nurse consulting business. My husband was the one who looked at the bank accounts, watched the cash flow, said to me, Pat, need to step up your marketing because the bank accounts are getting a little bit low. Send out a newsletter. That was his battle cry, because every time I sent out a newsletter in that era, I reminded my clients that I existed, and they started sending cases, regardless of what the newsletter was about. It was a trigger. And having that combination, whether that's a spouse, a partner, an accountant, somebody who is helping you as the legal nurse consultant, if finances are not your strong suit, having that person in your life gives you a backup and gives you somebody who can watch another aspect of your business for you.
And you can hire them. You don't have to marry them.
Marrying them is a lot more expensive and long-term solution, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But you know, it's funny when you're reminding me, you reminded me of something when you're talking about the newsletter and how it reminded people and of you, and you got cases, and all of your listeners could do something very similar, because I remember when I had the pension administration company, every time I got together with one of the accounting firms that would send us referrals, every time I got together with them for lunch or whatever, I got another referral. Mm-hmm. And very often when I wasn't in touch with them, I wasn't getting referrals. And so for anyone who's listening to your podcast, wherever their business is coming from, stay in contact with those people and let them know you exist. And it doesn't matter if you send them a little thank you note, if you just tell them what you're up to. Yes, remind them that you exist, and that can keep your business flowing.
Well, I appreciate those words of wisdom, Rennie, and I think we've covered quite a bit of territory. We know in what we've been discussing, that the wealthy have attitudes, focus on money, and focus on expenses in a way that helps to keep them wealthy. It helps them stay focused on the bottom line. Keeping track of your expenses, you reminded me of that story that I heard of a person who was stopping every day on the way to work to get one of the deluxe coffees, the designer coffees, and suddenly realized she was on a tight budget. She was spending a couple hundred dollars a month on coffee when she could have been putting that money on another aspect of her life. And you talked about the importance of working with people to help manage your money. If that's not your strong suit, having another person as a part of your team who can help you focus on that is essential. And then also, we started off by talking about the different levels of expenses, the discretionary, the fixed, and the third one was
variable.
Okay. Considering all three of those as you're looking at your income and your expenses, perhaps it's time to refocus on the budget, figure out what you need to be investing in and where there might be some leaking of money that you can plug up so that you can reallocate that and use that for another purpose.
Yeah, David Bach talks about the latte factor, which is what you were mentioning about someone who would get an expensive coffee on the way to work, where a simple change is make the coffee at home. It's a lot less expensive. And $300 a month, we're talking about $10 a day, could create a $1 million portfolio at 12% earnings over 30 years. So that coffee, you know, could have helped $1 million of investments vanish.
All down the throat.
And we won't talk about where it came out. Yes.
How can our listeners find out more about you, Rennie, and what you offer?
They can go to wealthonanyincome.com. I can, you know, if they want to send an email to me from there, I can send them a summary of a three-page summary of my award-winning book, along with the same forms the wealthy people use. If they go to wealthonanyincome.com/gift, it's /TEDx, they can get a roadmap to complete financial choice, as well as see my TEDx talk where I talk about some of the things that we touched on in this interview, as well as Shelter to Soldier.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me, reminding us of the importance of some of these financial aspects that need our attention and can always encourage us to go a little bit deeper and think about where we're spending our money as well as what we're doing to bring it in. Thank you, Rennie, and I appreciate you, the listener, for spending your time with me and with Rennie Gabriel this afternoon or this evening, no matter when you're listening, whether you're walking your dog or cleaning your house or taking a walk outside in the beautiful weather. I know that you may be doing something in addition to listening, and I appreciate you spending that time with me.
And thank you, Pat.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.